Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Veg Grower Podcast. My name is Richard and I am on a mission to grow my fruit, vegetables and herbs in my allotment and my garden, and I hope to inspire you to do exactly the same. Now, coming up this week, we've got some pests that we need to deal with. We've got a new feature called the Seed of the Month in collaboration with Premier Seeds Direct, and I've got a competition right at the end. But before all that, firstly, apologies for this podcast being a day late. I had one of my horrible migraines on Monday and I couldn't face doing all the editing. So let's head on into the kitchen and have a look at my seeds. Well, we start off this week in my kitchen, and on our windowsill, our worktops, they are just full of all our seedlings. I've got to say, my wife has been incredibly tolerant with all this, but at the end of the day, this is what we're going to produce food with. So we need to start somewhere, of course. One of the problems we've had, however, because it is, of course, warmer in our house and we don't get nature coming in as such, we do seem to get an increase in pests. A few weeks ago, I was having troubles with slugs and snails just munching on some of my young plants. And I treated that by using a product called Grazer's G2. This is a calcium-based organic product. You spray it onto your plants and it deters any slugs and snails from eating our seedlings, which is what I like. I don't like to kill anything. I sooner deter them from eating my plants and let nature deal with it, i.e. birds. Now, I spray this on about once a week now on all my plants just as a precautionary measure, and it seems to work quite nicely. We haven't had any trouble with slugs and snails. However, this week when I was examining some of my plants, I noticed, in particular my aubergine plants, they were looking very, very weak and flopped over. And upon closer inspection, what I discovered is loads of little white bugs, which I worked out to be an aphid by the name of whitefly. Now, I usually don't get many problems with pests outside particularly. Reason being is that I encourage nature into our garden. They come along and they deal with a lot of our pests. But inside this kitchen, nature, of course, cannot get in. So this left me with a bit of a dilemma, and I had to investigate what I could do. So I went through a lot of my suppliers I usually use to see if there was anything that I could use that fitted in with what I like. As I said, I don't like to kill anything, so I really don't want to use any pesticides. Natural predators would be my ideal thing, but indoors, not so easy to do, apart from, of course, Venus flytraps or carnivorous plants, which we do have a few of, but not going to cut it. So because of the success of the Grazer's G2, I looked into their products and I discovered they have something called Grazer's G3. Now, this is again calcium based, so it's perfectly organic, although it's not labeled as organic. It is natural. It doesn't kill anything. It just deters the aphids away from our plants. So I got some of that and I've sprayed that on daily just to get it started, and going in into the future, I will have to spray it on a weekly basis just to keep on top of it. It works just by deterring any of these pests away from my plants, and that means they should grow up to be big and strong. Ideally, I will be getting these out into the greenhouse fairly soon, but the temperature at the moment in the greenhouse just isn't warm enough, I don't think. I have moved one of my aubergine plants out there to see how they get on. Does seem okay, but I just think it's still a little bit cold out there for them. Now, I'm not actually sure what the difference between Grazer's G2 and Grazer's G3 is. They also do a G1, which I believe is pigeon and deer deterrent. Either way, they seem to have worked quite nicely for me, and I think I may well use these more in the future. Of course, what I would really like to do is natural predators and encourage those into our garden. Now, that brings me on to something that we do have visiting our garden over this last week, is hedgehogs. Now, hedgehogs are, of course, a natural predator for slugs and snails. So they're out in our garden hunting slugs and snails. And it's great to see them out there. They've upset Roxy, of course, because she's seen them out there and is unsure what to do with them. But they're out there. I'm happy with that. I think they are nesting underneath some of our logs, which is great, but I do want to make them a hedgehog house in the future. In all honesty, I do have some hedgehog food that I would like to leave out for the hedgehogs, but this brings me up onto another pest that we have noticed in our garden. I finished work early one day last week and I was out in the garden and I saw a rodent climbing up the inside of my chicken run. So I slowly crept up on it to it to get a good look at it and see what it was, because I wasn't sure if it was a large mouse or a small rat. And I got really close to it. I had a good look at it. I still can't work out because it had the face and ears of a mouse but the tail of a rat. And this rodent, it looked at me, it froze there for a second, realized I was there, and then dropped and run off. And well, I thought that would be it. And I spent a few days trying to figure out how I was going to tackle this, just in case it is rats. We've got chickens in our garden, which of course means that there's a good chance you will get rats at some point. And as I said, I don't like poisoning anything, and I prefer nature to do the job for me. Now, this could be encouraging owls into our garden or cats or anything like that that might kill these mice or rats. It seems very, very tricky to try and do that. However, at the weekend, I was out in the garden, beautiful sunny day, I've got to say. Roxy, my dog, was out there with me and she saw it and she caught it and she dispatched it, which was quite a sight. I'm not sure how I feel on that. It is a natural way, I guess, of disposing the rat slash mouse, but it's still been killed, and I'm not quite sure how I feel on that. However, Roxy, it is a natural way of dealing with it. No pesticides, no poisons have been used. So yeah, there's been a lot of focus going on with pests here at home over this last week, and it's something, moving forward, I think we're going to have to deal more and more with. Now, we have got a new feature coming up in just a moment called the Seed of the Month. In the meantime, let's find out what's been going on in the Supporters Club this week. Well, I hope you are enjoying this podcast so far. If you are, then perhaps you would be good enough to leave a rating and review on your podcast provider. It only takes you a few seconds, but it really helps people find this podcast more easily. It pushes the algorithm to really work it. Now, we've had a couple of reviews come in this week. Lynn, once again on Spotify, has said she really enjoyed the chat last week with myself, Jenny and Scott. Much appreciated, Jenny and Scott. I always love the positive feedback as well. We also had on Apple Podcasts from Kirsty the Duck a lovely review, which reads, "I find this podcast great motivation to get jobs done at the allotment and the garden. Richard's advice and experiments are really helpful also." Thank you so much for that, Kirsty. I really do appreciate it. Now, if you are also really enjoying this podcast and want to help support the work that we do, please consider becoming a member of our Supporters Club. For just £5 a month, you get extra behind-the-scenes podcasts as well as a collection of seeds sent to your door each month, and those seeds can be sown in that very month. I usually send out about 6 different seeds, and over this last week, we've just been going over the seeds that I've sent out for March. Right, well, talking of seeds, let's head on out to one of the other sheds to sow some seeds for the Seed of the Month feature. Well, I'm out in my shed and I am sowing some seeds. And we are now starting a new feature, which is in collaboration with Premier Seeds Direct. We're calling this feature the Seed of the Month. So each month we're going to feature one seed that Premier Seeds Direct sell. Now, Premier Seeds Direct sell seeds at very reasonable prices, and the quantities you get are unbelievable for the price you pay. They say that they are no-frills packaging company, and I can vouch for that. I've used them for many, many years, and I've always had really good service from them. Highly recommend them as a seed supplier. Now, this month, they have selected a seed to talk about, and it is a summer squash called Zephyr F1. Premier Seeds Direct sell it on their website, 10 seeds for £1.49. Absolute bargain, if you ask me. Chances are all 10 of these seeds will come up, so you get a decent amount of plants for not very much money. Now, this is a lovely summer squash, much like courgette, but it produces these lovely squashes that are half yellow, half green, with some white stripes as well. And they are absolutely delicious. They've got this really crisp, nutty flavour, used much like courgettes, but they are much more of a summer squash. Now, these seeds are fairly large and easy to handle, which makes them really easy to sow. What I've done is I've simply filled up some of my smaller garden pots up with multi-purpose compost, and I've popped a seed in each pot about 1 centimetre deep, making sure the seed is on its side. It just slides into the soil really nice and easy. Now, the critical part is that in order to assist germination, these seeds need to stay above 18 degrees C at all times, which means they need to be in a heated propagator. The greenhouse is just still a little bit too cold. If you don't have a heated propagator, you can still sow these right throughout March and April. So there's plenty of time. We're just waiting for 18 degrees C before they would germinate. But in a heated propagator, that takes the pressure out of it. We need to keep the soil moist during this time, and germination can actually be pretty quick, in under 10 days. Now, because these are a large seed, that usually means we're going to get a large seedling out of these. And this is why I've started these off in our garden pots, first of all. These pots are 5 centimetres across, so they're fairly large pots. And I've chosen that because what will happen is these grow quite quickly and the seedlings grow quite large. If we'd done them in plug plants, they would just grow too quick and outgrow those plug plants far too fast. So I started them off in pots just to get them at really good start. And then once the roots start coming out the bottom, we will pop them up into bigger and bigger pots. Again, a lot of what I'm doing at the moment with plug plants and pots is just saving myself time in the future by thinking ahead. And this is certainly the case when it comes to squash plants. I could, of course, use my root trainers that I have as well. They're a good thing to use for these type of squashes as well, because they are fairly large and encourages the plants to grow decent size roots. Now, we're not going to be able to plant these plants outside until the risk of frost has passed, which for me is mid-May. So we've got to keep them indoors or in the greenhouse until then and just keep potting them up. But what we're going to do in the meantime is prepare the area where these plants are going to grow. These do like a really sunny spot, protected from the wind. A nice sheltered spot, which is easy in my garden, I've got to say. On the allotment, we do get a fair amount of wind, but again, we could pot up some sort of netting or something if we do feel the need. Plenty of compost is going to be added to the ground as well. And with no dig gardening, this is easy. We just place the compost on top and get on with it. Then once the risk of frost has passed, come May, we dig a hole and pop the plant in. I give about 30 centimetres of space between each plant, and they will grow quite big. Water in well and keep the soil moist at all times, and they should grow quite nicely. As I say, they can grow quite big, these plants, so keep an eye on them. Now, once the flowers start to show, that's when we want to start feeding these plants with a decent tomato feed, about every 2 weeks. What this is going to do is just encourage the plant to flower, and therefore encourage the flowers to produce our squashes. Pollination is, of course, going to be important when we see the squash flowers. Now, most of the time, we're not going to have a problem with that, because at that time of year, bees are going to be out and our pollinating insects are going to be out to do the job for us. But if you don't see many bees or pollinator insects, you could of course take a nice soft paintbrush and just go from flower to flower, act like a bee and pollinate them yourself. Probably won't be a problem though. I don't ever feel like I've needed to do that on anything that I have growing outside. Flowers are of course going to turn into the squashes, and when they are fully ripe, about 10 to 15 centimetres long and nice uniform colour, we cut them off the vine and we harvest them and eat them. They have a nice, crisp, nutty flavour and they are absolutely delicious. I cannot wait to eat these, going to be so much fun. If you want to go and get yourself some of these seeds, look for Premier Seeds Direct online and you will come across their website, or I've added a link in the show notes if you want to go direct to them. Now, Chef Scott will come up with a recipe in the next couple of weeks for these squash plants, so keep listening to find out what we can do with the seed of the month. But talking of Chef Scott, let's find out what he has for us this week.
Hi, it's Scott here, and this week I have a parsnip recipe. Often used in soups or just simply roasted, I think they get overlooked, and I'm guilty of doing it myself. But in this week's recipe, I have replaced potato with parsnip in a breakfast favourite, hash browns, to create parsnip and parmesan hash browns, and it works so well. The natural sweetness works with your typical salty breakfast items like bacon, and add a poached egg, and I think it's getting close to breakfast perfection. And as part of a full English, I think it does achieve perfection. They are so simple to make, and once cooked, they freeze really well. And warmed from frozen in an oven, they get back to crispy goodness in no time at all, and work really well. And it's a great way of storing your parsnips. So, let's head to the kitchen and hear how it's made. As usual, you can find this recipe and others on the veggrowerpodcast.co.uk and also on my new Instagram page, Seed to Table Plot 13, where you will find other cooking and garden related bits and bobs. This recipe will make 4 hash browns, but it's worth making more and freezing. And you will need 250 grams of grated parsnips, 40 grams of grated parmesan, 50 grams of sliced spring onion, 30 grams of self-raising flour, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1 teaspoon of onion powder, 1 egg, and salt and pepper to season. Method: mix all the ingredients together in a mixing bowl until it loosely binds together, then form into patties. Then in a frying pan with a little oil and butter, fry on a medium heat until golden brown on each side. Then transfer to a baking tray and cook in an oven set at 200 degrees Celsius for 5 minutes. Then serve straight away or allow to cool and freeze. I hope you give this one a go, and that's it from me this week.
Now I'm out in the garden, I'm going to give you a bit of an update from the garden. Haven't been down to the allotment much this week because it's just too wet to do anything. I've been saying this for a few weeks now, but it is just so wet down on the allotment. And I know I'm not the only person that has been struggling with that on their allotment lately. However, here at home, we have chickens. And I've noticed over the last few weeks, of course, chickens have been going through their molt, which is a thing that happens. They shed some of their feathers in order to produce new ones. But during this time, they don't produce any eggs, which means we had run out of eggs indoors and Amanda decided to go and buy some eggs. First time we've bought eggs in years. But added to that, Bear is now over 8 years old. She's getting on a bit and we don't know how much longer she is going to last. So Amanda and I decided it was time to get 2 more chickens. Now, this time round, it has not been so easy to get any chickens. what seems to have happened, many of the breeders that we've used in the past have not got chickens available. And I think this is due to the lockdowns that we've had so much over the past years. They just haven't felt like putting all the effort and preparation in to getting chickens ready so early when they found themselves in the past during a lockdown due to bird flu, that they decided it just not worth the time, effort and loss of money. So it's been very difficult to find any chickens for sale, but we did find one breeder and we had to pre-order them, and I went and collected them on Saturday. Now I drove over to where I was getting them from. It's a bit of a nightmare with traffic, but we got there, took my dog crate with me as well, and I found a dog crate is just great for transporting chickens, it's got to be said, because they're just the right size, plenty of ventilation and what have you. We picked up two chickens and I brought them home and I've popped them into the chicken coop. Now I've sectioned off my chicken coop and this just means that my original chickens are in one area and the two new chickens are in another area. That way they can see each other and they can start to get used to each other. There is going to be a bit of squawking going on, and that certainly has been happening. And when eventually they do get together, there may even be a bit of fighting. So we have to try and introduce them gradually, hence why I section off different areas, just so they can get used to each other. A lot of noise, I've got to say, for the first few days, but they soon settled in, and they are going to remain separated for a little while longer. But during this time, I did spend some time out in my garden, doing a bit of tidying up and sorting a few things out. It's been really nice, actually, to spend some time in the garden. One of the things that I was doing was our strawberry runners. And I grow strawberries in hanging baskets. There's a very good reason for this. And that is because of the system that I've set up, which enables me to move strawberries around depending on their age. So what I mean by that, the strawberries that I've potted up this week are year one strawberry. They're runners that came off the plants from last year. In year one, these strawberries will go in my greenhouse here at home and should hopefully start to produce an early crop of strawberries. Now the ones that were in the greenhouse last year, this is going to be their second year, so they will stay in the hanging baskets, but they will go outside where we'll probably get a bit of a later crop, but they should do pretty well out there. Now next year, these ones that are out in the garden will go down to the allotment for the next couple of years, years three and four. Again, we're going to get some decent strawberries out of them down there. But after 4 years, strawberry plants tend to not be so good at producing strawberries. So what I find by growing these in hanging baskets, once they get past 4 years old, it's very easy to empty them out of the baskets into the compost heap and be done with them. Just a way of trying to keep on top of how old the strawberries are. One of the problems many people have is they grow in the ground, the runners take up more and more ground, and it becomes very difficult to work out how old the strawberries really are. This way I found has really worked wonders for me. It helps me keep organised and know how old the plants are. Now I've also sown quite a thick row of early peas. This has gone into the pea and bean bed here at home, which was the brassica bed last year. And I've just run a drill into the ground, sowed a few peas, and then I've put a cloche over them just until germination. This is a variety called Meteor, which is an early variety. They should germinate quite nicely there. Once they're germinated, I will put a piece of netting up for these peas to climb up. They should do quite well. I'll be keeping an eye on them, of course, but they should do quite well out here. It is a little early, is a little cold, but these peas should be able to tolerate it. I've also backed it up by sowing a tray of peas in the greenhouse as well, just to make sure we can get some early peas. Now, while I was doing this, of course, I've been monitoring the chickens and making sure they settle in quite nicely, which they seem to have done really, really well. Now, our first chicken, Amanda, has named Equinox, and she is a speckled Marin chicken. She's got this beautiful speckled black, grey and white feather look to us. She looks absolutely stunning. And best of all, she should produce some eggs with some interesting speckles and coloured shells. So I'm kind of excited to buy that. The second bird we've got is a white leghorn. Now, this is a pure white bird and she should lay white eggs. But we haven't named her yet. This leads us up to the competition that I am running. What I want from any listener out there to suggest a name for this chicken. And all names have to be in by March the 31st, so we got a month to go. All names will be placed in a hat and I will choose one name from the hat and that hat will be the winner. But what can you win, I hear you ask? Well, you could win a pair of adult tickets to the Gardeners World Spring Fair on Sunday the 5th of March. Now, there are terms and conditions that apply, of course, but I've added a link in the show notes if you want to go find out the details. You could, of course, suggest a name if you don't want to enter the competition. I also have a discount code if you want to go on any of the other days as well to the Gardeners World Spring Fair at Bewley in the New Forest. I've been there many times in the past. It's a great day out, I have to say. Right, well, the chickens have just gone to bed, so I am going to head back into the podding shed. Well, here we are at the end of this podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. Please, if you have, rate and review on your podcast provider. Please consider becoming a supporting member. And don't forget to like and follow on social media. And you can also get in touch via social media. If you do want to get in touch as well, you can email me, richard@theveggrowerpodcast.co.uk, or you can head to theveggrowerpodcast.co.uk, where you can leave a comment on the bottom of a blog post, or you can leave a voicemail using our voicemail service. Absolutely love getting the voicemails, so please do consider doing that. We will be back again next time, so until then, please take care.